There are alternative facts. There are non-facts in this strange political environment. And then there are delayed facts, late facts, missed the deadline facts. Scott Pruitt was confirmed as the new administrator of the Environmental Protection Agency last Friday. The vote was accelerated, not because there was some critical piece of federal business that needed attention. It was to win a race against lawyers who were trying to get made public about 3,000 pages of Pruitt's emails from his time as Oklahoma Attorney General, supposedly showing his close ties to the fossil fuel industry. But the lawyers couldn't get them released until Wednesday, when over 6,000 pages of correspondence were finally made public in response to a lawsuit filed by the Center for Media and Democracy. Lisa Graves is the director for the Center for Media and Democracy. She joins me now. Lisa, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks, John. It's nice to be on.
So why were these documents delayed for any reason?
Well, the team Pruitt there in Oklahoma, where he was the attorney general of the state, basically dragged their feet for months and months. And then during his confirmation process, senators asked him about his relationship with these industries, with these oil companies and gas companies. And he basically said they should go file an open records request with his office and, in essence, get in line behind us after we've been waiting for more than 2 years for these materials. And so it's more stonewalling on his part because we know that these documents, some of which just came out this week, show his cozy ties with these big companies and how much he was willing to use the public office of attorney general to serve the private interests of these big corporations.
And that's essentially right. That, I mean, that is the issue here, that Pruitt as attorney general was acting as essentially a kind of counsel for the fossil fuel industry, not as a representative of the people of the state of Oklahoma. Here's Senator Jeff Merkley, who is making that point in the hearings on January 18th.
You used your office as a direct extension of an oil company rather than a direct extension of the interests of the public health of the people of Oklahoma. Do you acknowledge that you presented a private oil company's position rather than a position developed by the people of Oklahoma?
Senator, with respect, I disagree. The efforts that I took as Attorney General were representing the interest of the state of Oklahoma.
Lisa Graves, what in these documents disputes his answer and supports Merkley's question?
Well, these documents include additional references for Scott Pruitt to cut and paste from industry talking points as part of the legal positions and public positions that he was putting forward. And it also shows a number of communications with his staff, cozy communications with his staff and groups that are funded by the Koch brothers and others, talking about how, in essence, they're on the same team. And so, you know, this is a situation where now we have this man in charge of the EPA, and he has basically committed his public career, his public life to trying to destroy that agency and limit its power to regulate the toxins, you know, the toxins of mercury, to regulate carbon, to address the harms to our climate, and to engage in a variety of regulatory actions to protect us against the pollution of our water and our air. He's now in the cabinet, and they're still trying to stonewall us and stonewall the American people.
All right. Well, Lisa, I want to be careful here because, I mean, and it's no, you know, tongue in cheek. I mean, I've been called a member of the media, you know, enemy of the United States here. Let's be careful with the language. You say cozy communications. What is an example of a cozy communication or an inappropriate communication that you can see between Pruitt and the fossil fuel industry?
Well, in this instance, we see communications from them talking about these past letters that they've put together and how he should just cut and paste from those in order to move forward. Now, it's certainly the case that people do sometimes cut and paste, although I think in this instance where the New York Times talked about how he basically just slapped his letterhead on an energy company's critique of energy policy, that's a part of a pattern that he has, this cutting and pasting. And so at the same time, I would say to you that this this team of Pruitts in Oklahoma has continued to deny us access to any emails directly from Mr. Pruitt. And so we are in court this week and next week trying to get those materials and beyond, because they've only given us a tip of the iceberg of these materials. They're still hiding information. But what we do know is that this is a pattern, this close relationship. And in fact, he hasn't apologized for it. He's claimed that it is, in essence, representative government, that he's representing all the people of Oklahoma, including those oil companies and gas companies.
Anything in these documents that you've seen so far that would have denied him confirmation, number one? And number two, officials in Oklahoma that we've spoken to say that, you know, Pruitt has a view that the fossil fuel industry and environmentalists need to work more collaboratively together. And that's what he's committed to as head of the EPA. And he's not going to be just one versus the other. He's going to try to get them together around the same table. What do you say to that argument?
Well, I say that's an interesting talking point since in his career, his actions speak louder than his words. And those actions have shown a tremendous hostility, perhaps the most hostile person ever nominated and confirmed to head the EPA. He has basically declared war on the EPA. That's, you know, his rhetoric about the EPA as a warrior against the EPA. Those aren't our words. Those are the words that he has used and that he and his colleagues have put forward, that that's what he saw as his role. So if indeed he's going to somehow be the partner of the environmental community, that would be a major change in course. I don't think it's going to happen based on his documented history, but I suppose we'll see, and we'll see more of his documents as the court orders more and more of them released.
But you don't believe anything you've seen so far would have changed the confirmation vote?
No, and in fact, given the makeup of Congress, we actually did end up with having one Republican senator vote against him. But the fact is that the Senate is entitled to this information, and if it were run properly, if it were run along with normal standards for nominees, a nominee would not have been allowed to stonewall and go forward. The Senate would have determined that it needed that information for the sake of all of its members to be educated versus ramming him through to be confirmed last week.
Lisa Graves is director of the Center for Media and Democracy. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thank you, John.